All right, so this summer I was invited to speak at East Tacoma, and they had a series called Being Successful. And I took the lesson, Being a Successful Parent. That was one of the lessons they offered there. And so I spoke on that over there, and I thought, you know, this is a message that everyone needs to hear. And even if you're not a parent of younger children, nonetheless, I think there's a lot of good principles here that are across the board and for grandchildren as well. So this whole thing about being successful as a parent or being successful all begs the question, what does it mean to be successful? Literally, being successful means to have reached a favorable or desired or known outcome. And it implies a finished accomplishment. Now, keep in mind, we are all a work in progress, right? So success is really a relative term. You might have been successful till now, but that doesn't mean you're going to always be successful. There's always something to do there. So being a successful parent, I do believe, and I'm not tooting my horn when I say this, but I do believe I speak with at least some degree of qualification. Honey and I have been married for almost 30 years, and it feels like 15 to me. I'm sure it feels like a lot longer for her. We have raised two children, almost 25 and now 27 years old for Logan and then Larissa. They have both chosen to be Christians. They are both college educated. They are both employed. I believe them to be both responsible adults. But that does not mean that my job as a parent is over, or that I have done this or continue to do this far better than anyone else, or that Honey and I have mastered this role as parents. It only means that so far we have reached a favorable and desired outcome as measured by realistic goals or realistic measurements there. And it also doesn't mean that just because my children turned out well is why I'm successful or Honey is successful. That doesn't mean that. We are focusing this lesson on parenting, on the parent themselves or parents themselves, not on the children so much, and that will come out. To clear the air, I thought before we talk about being a successful parent, it might be helpful to talk about what a successful parent is not, or what we don't mean by this here. So let me just start out by saying successful parenting doesn't mean that it is easy, or that it is effortless, or that it is a walk in the park. Achieving success in anything is never easy. Easy is walking the wide path of least resistance. And success in any case always talks about walking the narrow way that few people will take the time or make the effort to walk. Okay? And that's a real big point here. Don't confuse procreation here with successful parenting. Anybody can procreate, okay? Now, that is proven to us out in society all the time, unfortunately, all right? But don't think that just mere procreation means that now you're going to be a successful parent any more than sitting in a church building makes you a faithful Christian, or speaking behind a pulpit makes you a successful minister of the gospel, or being called an elder makes you a successful shepherd in the church. Terms by themselves, or, you know, certain actions by themselves don't mean anything unless it is followed up by a continued and measured successful walk there. Also, it does not mean, successful parenting does not mean that it's always enjoyable or rewarding. I know every parent wants to hear this. It's just going to be one, you know, grand walk of bliss, and it's just going to be so much joy, and they're just going to be gushing with, you know, joy, and it's just not like that, okay? I will say our kids did bring some great joy to us, and I will even say more than I ever imagined that I could have. But they also brought some of the greatest heartache and some of the greatest emotional pain and some of the greatest discomfort that I ever felt, and I never saw that coming. Now, I don't mean to scare all you young parents, but that's what's down the road, okay? So there's great joy. There's great joy, no question, but there's also other things as well. It doesn't mean that we made no mistakes along the way. That's not true. Larissa heard this first lesson at East Tacoma, and she asked me on the way home, what were some of those mistakes? I'm not going to share all those with you right now, partly because I don't want to embarrass myself, but also we just don't have time, because there were several. But success is not always measured by flawless performance. Only God is flawless. He does everything perfect the first time. But we go through a process of trial and error. It doesn't matter how smart we are or how many advantages we have or how many resources we are blessed with, we go through trial and error. A successful parent doesn't mean we have no regrets, because again, we have plenty of those, and you know, not enough to warrant failure, of course, or a waste of time. If I were given a second time around with what I've learned, with what we've learned and how we've gained experience, I would think we could have done so much better. But that's how it is, you know. You learn through the process, and God knows that. It doesn't mean that my kids are perfect people. I'll be the first to tell you that they're not. But to their credit, they did listen to at least most of the advice that we gave them, and they realized, especially over time, that mom and dad are right, that they are not insane. Okay, so parents, there is hope down the road. And they are far better off than we are in the circumstances in which both of us were raised. They are far better off than we are. And I will say that honestly. And it doesn't mean that honey and I are perfect parents, because we are not, and my kids will be the first to tell you that. But we didn't just bumble or stumble along either aimlessly. We followed the Bible. We took good advice. We sought good advice. We implemented strategies, and we were consistent. And having said all that briefly, what a successful parent is not, I now want to spend the rest of the lesson saying what a successful parent really is. First thing that we did is that we recognized and maintained our role as parents. We were not our kids' buddies or best friends or anything like that that I hear so much of from parents today, because we recognize that our kids are not equals to us. They are not adults. They are not mini adults. We are the adults. We are the authorities. We are the authority figures. They are children who are subordinate to and submissive to us. That's how it has to be. We recognize that, and we maintain that from the beginning. It doesn't mean we didn't care about them. It doesn't mean we didn't show compassion to them. And it doesn't mean that we didn't goof off and be silly with them, because my kids have plenty of stories about me in particular goofing off. And then, you know, mom, honey, always standing off, scowling at us. All right, something like that. But what it does mean is that there was no question who was in charge and who deserved the greatest respect and who made the decisions in the household. There was no question of that. Our responsibility as parents was to establish authority, not as tyrannical ogres, I had to put that in there, but because law and order are required in order for success to happen. You've got to have structure. You've got to have law and order. So we laid down house rules. We established boundaries and expectations. And by the way, those expectations did change as children grew in age and maturity. That's fine, and that's understandable. But there were expectations nonetheless for every age. We established and we maintained family traditions. We provided a source of knowledge and a source of answers and good advice. We loved unconditionally. We didn't just love if they behaved themselves, or when they were good kids, or because they did this or that. We loved them anyway, no matter what. And we did our best to show that and to communicate that. That is an important, very important point. Kids need to be taught how to respect adults and adult authority and adult privilege. We did not give our kids everything that they wanted when they wanted it. And I know it sounds like this borders on child abuse, but we would actually go to a coffee shop, Starbucks or whatever, and we would order coffee and got nothing for our kids. I know some of you are calling CPS right now. But that is not child abuse. That is called adult privilege. And I don't feel like our kids need to have adult privilege when they're not adults. And so we did not always give them everything they wanted. At potlucks, we ate first, and when they were, say, 8 years old and above, they waited for us, and I made no apology for that. We held family meetings in our home, and I served as moderator and judge. Honey was my lieutenant. The kids were always given a voice and opportunity to speak and to speak, you know, whatever they wanted, but they were always expected to do two things. First of all, respect the authority of the house, and secondly, comply with whatever decisions were rendered. Increasingly, parents are allowing children far too much decision-making power, often before the children are trained how to make decisions or even what kind of decisions to make. The children are lacking in wisdom, they lack in maturity, they lack in historical perspective. All of this is a recipe for spoiled children. And spoiled children grow up to be entitled adults. And so what are you looking at in America right now? We have a lot of spoiled children, and we have a lot of entitled adults who think that this government and this land and all of you are here to serve them and them alone. And that starts in the home. They are taught that. They are conditioned to think that way. God did not entrust my children with raising themselves. Rather, he entrusted us as parents with raising the children. I looked through the book of Proverbs 7 times. Specifically, the proverb writers say, "Sons and daughters, listen to me." It never says, "I will sit and listen to your wisdom. I will go and follow your counsel, sons and daughters." It's always in one direction. It never tells me to listen to them for wisdom or guidance. That is God speaking to us. This is what he says. Second thing that we did is we trained them with 2 objectives, to be good citizens and faithful Christians. And I told them this often, since they were old enough to understand what either one of those things were. We're told in Proverbs 22:6, everyone's familiar with this passage, "Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." I want to focus on that very first word there, train, because that's the word that often gets overlooked right there. We look at this and say, well, you know, that if we give them a path, and obviously they'll never depart from it. It's an axiomatic statement. It's not in concrete, because we know children can depart from that, even though they are trained. But here's what training means here. Training refers to education. Training refers to discipline. And by discipline, I don't mean just punitive discipline. I mean structure. Something to give kids an expectation of. So we had to give boundaries for our kids. We are to provide a realistic expectation for their behavior in the home, in public, at the church building, when we're visiting people, when people are visiting us. There is a certain decorum or expectation that is expected of them. It's not rocket science, and it's not set in stone either. There's always going to be hiccups, but the point I'm trying to make here is that they know what is expected because they were trained that way. You can't expect children to meet goals, to be good citizens or faithful Christians, if you don't give them the proper amount of training. And by training, I don't mean like you tell them how you would do it, but rather you tell them how it ought to be done. And by training, I don't mean that you just tell them and never give them an opportunity to work that out and then see if they're going to fail or if they're going to succeed, but rather you train them and then you allow them to put that training into practice, and if they fall on their face, then you go and help them up. You don't berate them. You don't sit there and critique them and criticize them. You go and you help them up, help them to learn how to use that training. Imagine that your child has a job at Starbucks and they're thrown in there at, you know, whatever it is, 16, 17 years old, and the manager of the coffee shop says, "Okay, I want you to go make a bunch of coffees and drinks." So just go, boom. And the person has no idea what to do. Actually, I think I've been to some of these Starbucks. Nonetheless, that person has no idea what to do, and they are guaranteed to fail. They're going to make all kinds of mistakes, probably will end up getting fired. And so my point here is, when you throw food and clothing and toiletries at your children for 18 years and then send them out into the world and say, "Be adults, be responsible," but you haven't trained them how to do that. And I don't mean just lecture them or have a little sit down back when they were 13. I mean train them regularly, habitually, and you are setting them up for failure. And they are going to fail. And those employers are not going to be as nice to them as you were. And their employers are not going to hold their hand and, you know, listen to all their problems. They're just going to say, "You're out of here and I'll get someone else." And then our children are crushed and, you know, all that sort of thing, all because, well, it started in the home because we did not train them right. Our job as parents is not scientifically defined, because human nature is not an exact science, but it is sufficiently defined through a study of the Word of God, through His leadership and His dealing with Israel. If you look in the Old Testament, for example, and these things are written for our instruction, Romans 15:4, if you look there, you will see that God gave Israel law and expectations and then backed up and let them practice those things. And sometimes they did well and He praised them, and other times they fell on their face and He sent people to help them up. God was a very good parent. We taught them how to be good citizens. Good citizenship is all about patriotism, love for your country. Respect for your country, honor the country and its laws, honor the flag, honor the Constitution, and honor those who support all those things. And that doesn't mean that we cannot disagree with governmental decisions. It doesn't mean that we cannot disagree with government employees. But in the end, we are supposed to be responsible and law-abiding citizens. We should be responsible and proud. Romans chapter 13, verse 1 through 4, Paul says, in the midst of that, every person is to be in subjection to governing authorities. He's speaking specifically to Christians. I cannot expect my children to respect the law or obey my, or to respect me, I should say, or obey my authority if I am myself a law-breaking, American-bashing rebel. And neither can you. I am hearing all the time all this nonsense, people saying, not my president, and sowing seeds of rebellion and division and destruction in our country. Sometimes this is being carried out as Christians, and that is a shame, because that is neither patriotic nor biblical nor Christian. That is not what we are taught. And so we need to teach our children by example. If you want your children to obey you and respect you, then you be obedient, respectful. And we have a point of reference there as to what we are to obey and respect. First of all is the Word of God. Second to that, but importantly, it is our country. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1 through 3. I'd like you to read that with me, if you would. 1 Timothy 2, verse 1 through 3. Paul says, first of all, then I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and all who are in authority, so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. This is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. Just think about what he just said there. It is good and acceptable to pray for our rulers and our president. It is good and acceptable to be obedient and responsible citizens. And all this begins in the home as to what is being taught that is good and acceptable. So Honey and I tried our best to do this. We taught our kids to be involved in school and in the community. We tried to set an example to help the community. We, in Alaska in particular, we many times went out on litter gathering expeditions there, sometimes with the school, sometimes on our own. Honey served often in the PTA. I taught chess in the elementary school. We attended Veteran Day celebrations. Our kids were very actively involved in Boy Scout and Girl Scout. And I do want to put a little shout out there that both of them reached the highest ranks possible in both of those organizations. We taught our kids how to be faithful Christians. Our job was not merely to take our kids to church, but more importantly, to lead our kids to Christ and to lead by example. We read in our scripture reading, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, Paul says, fathers, bring them, children, up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. You know, he talks about, you know, don't exasperate your children too in that passage. There's just nothing more provoking or exasperating than expecting children to obey God and believe Christ and believe the Word of God and love Christians when their parents refuse to do this. That is exasperating. We understood that. And so we tried our best to honor that. Now, did we do it perfectly? I don't believe we did. Do we do it perfectly today? I don't think we do. We are trying, and we are making a great effort toward that. For many years, when my kids were young, I read the Bible to them. And then when they got older, I read the Bible with them. And then I had them put together biblical talks and PowerPoints. In other words, I understood as a father that spiritual education of my children was ultimately my responsibility. It was not my wife's. It was not the Bible class teacher's. It was not the church's responsibility. It was not the elder's responsibility. It was mine. And we prayed with them and we prayed for them. We knew that our task was greater than what we could have done on our own. That's why we did the praying. And we laid the groundwork. And we set the foundation. And we reinforced that foundation with rebar and then we poured the concrete. It was up to them to build upon that foundation, and thankfully I believe that they have so far, but we understood it was not our place to cram our personal beliefs and our faith and our convictions down their throat, but rather to teach our children what convictions are and where to get them and how to have them. And again, we had to lead by example. Thirdly, we were consistent in our message. Dad is in charge. Mom is second in command, and kids are kids. And those roles never changed, and those roles were never interchangeable. And I cannot tell you how important that is to have that set from the earliest age in your children's lives. We did not vacillate between stern and then strict and then spineless to anything goes. We didn't vacillate there. We did not send mixed signals when laying down house rules or administering discipline. Kids knew when we were being silly and when we were teasing them, and they knew when we were serious and when we were mad. It was very clear. We were not easily played, although they tried and did sometimes succeed. I found out more of that after they left the home, still finding out some things. I think they've come clean mostly, although I have a few questions. But nonetheless, in cases where major decisions were needed, Honey and I would, retreat to the other room and we would talk privately and we would come to a unified verdict and then we held to that verdict unless circumstances forced a change or the kids just outgrew the verdict, so to speak. Consistency is one of the greatest and most powerful parenting tools that you can ever have. But the reason why so many parents are inconsistent is because consistency takes time and effort. It is work, and it is hard. It is not easy. It's simple, honestly, but it doesn't mean that it's easy. You cannot allow your emotions to override your common sense and your good judgment and what you know to be true. I can't emphasize that enough. So many times what parents do, and we, by the way, sometimes did succumb to this and certainly felt the pressure to do this, but you feel that emotion rising and then all rational judgment goes out the window and it just becomes just, this is what we have to do. And, it's all about, Jimmy and Susie and, our kids. And that's what it's all coming down to. And the fact is you are smarter than that. And you are supposed to exercise that intelligence that God gave you. If you show me a house where mom and dad's rules and expectations change from day to day or one situation to another, I will show you a dysfunctional household that is not going to be successful in its parenting. And this is true. Consistency is true in administering discipline as it is in showing love and compassion. Children need to experience consequences for bad behavior. And at the same time, they need to feel your unconditional love for them because they are part of your family. And there is a consistency needed in both of those cases on either extreme, if you will. God himself is consistent. Just think about it if he was not. Think about it if God was very forgiving one day and very unforgiving the next. Or if he was just all nice and, compassionate one day and the next day he's just towing the line and, it's just all about law, law, law. Or if he's just happy with you and then for no apparent reason he's just terribly angry with you. Well, that just wouldn't work. And that's not how God is. In fact, in Hebrews 13, verse 8, it says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We're told in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 19, the Son of God is not yes and no at the same time. He is solid, he is consistent, he is reliable. You'll see a phrase in the New Testament over and over. It says, God is faithful. And that phrase doesn't just mean that God is faithful to any one thing. It means that God is faithful. That is his character. That is his nature. So God is faithful to you. He is faithful to his word. He is faithful to his covenant. He is faithful to his son. He is faithful to himself. God is faithful. Now, I'm not trying to compare Honey and I to God, because we failed many times, and God never fails. But we did use God's faithfulness as a guide, and we tried our best to be faithful to God, to each other, and to our children. We tried our best to be consistent and reliable and trustworthy. And that word trustworthy brings us to the next point. We valued honesty and accuracy in all of our dealings. We had a zero tolerance policy for lying or deceiving or stealing in any way. You can't be consistent and faithful and stable if you are not honest. You need to have straightforward, no-nonsense answers. When I was young, I was 12, 13, 14 years old. I was working on a dairy farm, and I had a boss who was tall and scary and stern, and when he talked, people listened. He demanded respect, and I was extremely intimidated by this. And one thing that he put into my head was, just when things happen, I don't want stories. I just want to know what happened. And that has stuck with me. The fact that I'm telling you this here 20 years later, don't do the math. The fact that I'm telling you all these years later tells you how deeply penetrating that message was to me. I have used those same words so many times to my kids and to other people. Don't tell me stories. Just tell me what happened. And that is powerful. So there's some points to bring out in that little scenario I just told you. First of all, kids need to work. It is good for them. Parents, stop doing everything for your children who are capable of doing it themselves. Secondly, kids also need to be accountable for their work. That also is good. Parents, stop apologizing or covering up for your kids when they don't do well. Show them what they did not do well, and show them then how they need to do it rightly, and set them back on the path. And thirdly, kids cannot make excuses for poor work and being irresponsible. That is not good, but sadly, I know where they learn that from. Usually it's from their parents. That's where they're seeing it most of all. And that's where it is allowed to happen. John chapter 8, verse 44, Jesus said of Satan that he is the father of lies. That doesn't matter whether those are, as we call, bald-faced lies or half-truths or little white lies. It doesn't matter. A lie is a lie. If it's not fully the truth, then it is a lie. And we did not want our children to become Satan's children by teaching them that lying is okay or permissible or even humorous. In Revelation chapter 14, verse 5, it says of the 144,000, which I understand to be the church on earth, the physical church, it says of that group of people, no lie was found in their mouth. This is how God's people should be. There should not be lies in their mouth. And this is how, therefore, we should teach our children to be. We should not put lies in their mouth or give them opportunity to lie and get away with it. And that means that we as parents have to set a good example. Parents that lie, parents that deceive, parents that manipulate words and spin stories, often to make themselves look good or to twist the truth or to keep themselves from being exposed, they are only training their children to be with Satan and not with God, because the kids are always listening and watching everything. Matthew chapter 18, verse 6, one of the awful stumbling blocks that you can put in front of your children is to teach them that when it is to your advantage, lying and deceiving and storytelling is okay. And finally, for the short list here, we often did things as a family, whether it was walking or biking, or hiking, fishing, camping, vacationing, potlucking, singings, whatever it was. And as you know, many of you know, we spent 9 years in Alaska when our kids were young, and Alaska is an excellent playground to bring up kids. And we continued that to the best of our ability in Washington. My point with all this is that you cannot create family bonds and quality time and lifelong memories by any one adventure. Rather, you need a whole bunch of them, and you don't know which one of those are going to stick. It may be one thing for you, but another thing for your kids. You might remember a vacation, you think with your kids, you're recalling it later on, say, oh, that was such a great time. They're going like, eh. But then some other little trip that you thought was kind of a, you know, maybe a waste of time, they're like, that was the memory of my life. That was the most important thing. So it might be a big camping trip in the little town of Hope, Alaska, where we went a number of times. It might be a bike ride along Alki Beach, or it might be snuggling on the couch with popcorn and snacks while watching home movies. You don't know which one's going to stick. So do a whole bunch of them. Most importantly, we involved our kids in the church work with us, whatever was required of them, to the point where they could participate. Joshua 24:15, Joshua says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, and we took that very seriously. As long as our kids were under our roof, they were expected to join us in the work of the Lord. They were expected to join us in those responsibilities. And after that, of course, it would be their decision to carry on whether or not to serve the Lord was going to happen in their house. I could go on and on, honestly. I mean, a lesson like this, each point deserves a whole lesson to itself. But the main point I'm making here is that we had specific goals in mind, and we developed a plan to achieve those goals, and then we executed those goals. We did something. We did achieve at least most of those goals successfully. Not flawlessly, painlessly, but successfully. When I say we achieved most of them, we didn't achieve them on every single occasion, but I do believe we achieved them overall. And I want to be clear, too, that I and honey, we do not measure successful parenting only because our children turned out to be Christians. Because I want to tell you that you can be a lousy, godless, and irresponsible parent, and your children can still turn out to be Christians. But I also want to tell you that you can be the best parent, Christian parent on the planet, and your children may walk away from the Lord. So even Jesus had multitudes follow him, but recognized that very few stayed behind after it was all done, and Jesus died alone on the cross. Even one of Jesus' own children, so to speak, that being Judas, turned against him. And yet, look at what he says at the end of it all. John 17, verse 4, in his prayer to God, he says, I accomplished the work which you have given me to do. He considered it all a success, and he considered his mission successful. But we should measure personal success, then, by God's standard, not your children's decisions or anyone else's. Okay, so as I see on the screen here, parenting should measure what parents did, not what their children will choose to do, especially with reference to their faith and their God. So I don't measure our parenting as successful just because, again, our kids became Christians. That's not the measuring stick by itself. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 18, Paul says, for it is not he who commends himself that is approved, but he whom the Lord commends. There is our measuring stick right there. So you are not a successful or unsuccessful parent by your own determination, nor by your children's. That's not what measures you. I have been to many funerals where children have gotten up, usually adult children by that point. They've gotten up and they've talked about their parents or a parent that just died. And of course, they're going to say, my mom or my dad was the greatest mom or the greatest dad. Well, first of all, I don't really believe that. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just don't believe that. Secondly, that's just their opinion. Because that child's say-so or their opinion right there is not an accurate measurement of what mom or dad really was. Because, of course, at funerals, everyone's filled with emotions, and of course they're going to say nice things. What I want to strongly advise you is to find out what God says success is all about. What does God say makes you a successful parent or successful anything, and especially a successful Christian? Find out what God says and do that. So the same can be said for taking care of your soul. If you want to find out what it means to be successful as a Christian, then you need to find out what God says to do, and you need to do this, and you will live. That's what Jesus said. So I think there's a lot to draw from here for everyone. Principles that go across the board, whether you have children at home or even grandchildren, that's not completely relevant here. What we're talking about really is life principles, good stewardship, and a faith in God. That's really what all this comes down to. So I hope that someone's heart has been pricked by what we have said, maybe encouraged, maybe inspired. Maybe you've been thinking about becoming a Christian and you haven't done that yet. Maybe now is the time. Or maybe you have become a Christian and you just haven't been following through. You've had no game plan. You're just kind of winging it. And that is not a way to succeed there. You're not going to be successful doing that. I'm telling you up front. You need to have a plan. You need to follow the plan. God is the one who writes the plan. So if there's anyone who needs to respond to our traditional invitation this morning, you can come forward if you need to as we stand and sing the song Bob has selected for us here.